Hey, welcome to the Happy Ramp Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined, as always, in studio by Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin, who is eating snow peas. Is that what we hear crunching in the background, Big R?
Snap peas. I like the way snow peas, I like that rendering of it. I think that sounds better.
That's much closer to Christmas.
It is. It sounds more romantic. Yeah. So let's go back to your original thought. I'm eating snow peas.
Dude, and you lead nothing if not a life of romance and intrigue there in Ashland, Ohio. So are you in Ashland today? Are we jumping the gun and assuming that?
Yeah, no, I'm in A-Town. I am indeed in A-Town, absolutely.
A-Town, USA. A-Town in June, baby.
It's like 4th of July all year round, starting in June through August here. That's what it is.
Basically Memorial Day through like the end of July is just one big flag-waving parade in Ashland, right?
Oh, seriously, Pipe. I mean, it is like baseballs and apple pie are just raining from the sky right now.
See, that part sounds great. It's the flag-waving parade part I'm not quite so crazy about.
Well, they're raining down on the flag-waving parades is what it is. Baseballs and apple pie.
Yeah. Just picturing baseballs like knocking small children out of their strollers or something.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that's literally how it is. That's like the most accurate picture of A-Town you can possibly come up with.
Maybe it's Rockwellian is what it is. Yeah. I wish Norman Rockwell were still around to paint you in A-Town in the summer.
Oh, can you imagine what those paintings would fetch on the open market?
Unbelievable on the open market. I know you're a businessman. I mean, we're on the same page there. Speaking of works of art, original works of art, what's the Me on a Horse situation? Has there been any traction in that regard
on social media? As of today, we have one photoshopped Ted's head onto Vladimir Putin riding a horse, which is amusing, if not artistic.
Is it shirtless Vladimir Putin, I hope?
Yes, the shirtless one.
Amazing.
And so that looks delightful. And then we have a promise from at least one Twitter follower to draw you on a horse. So I honestly can't recall the origin of Ted on a horse. Was like, where was this born out of? I remember us having a conversation, but I have no recollection of.
So I remember this. We taped an episode like 10 years ago that finally aired on Monday. And
right, this is what happens when I leave the country. I drop the ball on everything, so my bad.
Well, yeah, and Ron and I aren't capable enough of even remotely picking up the ball, so part of that is on us. But yeah, we talked about it a super long time ago, and then it appeared in the episode that just aired.
So, okay.
That's the origin of that. But I like this motif of people drawing us. This is a lot of fun. I think we're really getting somewhere as a program. As long as we're doing that. But we also have to do some business, Pipe. And you have a sponsor to lay on us, and I would like for you to do that right now.
Absolutely. So this is a long-time sponsor. It is the Adele's Burgers again. So Renee, who is a Bible teacher specifically for younger women, high school, middle school, even up into college age, she blogs at pedestriangod.com. But she has started what they call a flash briefing. So that's for Alexa. That's the, you know, you talk to it and it records all your conversations. It knows all your movements. Big Brother is watching. But it can also feed you a daily devotional from Renee so that in the midst of your busy life, getting kids off to school, or in this case, probably wrangling them at home while they're miserable around one another all summer long, you can have a daily devotional piped in. So that you can do that in the midst of everything else you have going on, or you can listen to it through all of Amazon's apps. So you can do it in your car or while you're running or walking or exercising, or in Ronnie's case, you know, sitting and staring at a minimalistic room. So daily devotional aimed specifically at women from Renee Adelsberger. If you go to pedestriangod.com, you'll see flash briefing right at the top. You can click that and it gives all the instructions of how to access it. If you're sort of new to the world of Alexa, and then my guess is there will be ads for this thing showing up like in your emails and on every sidebar of every website you go to, because that's how these things work. So you won't be able to escape it, nor will you want to.
Oh, Pipe, that's gold. That's a good read right there. And boys, I got to tell you, I don't have an Alexa, so I'm a newcomer to how these things work. But if you were to say to Alexa, "Alexa, play the Happy Rant podcast," would that work? Would that be a thing? Like, are we on there?
That's a good question. I'd have to go figure that out. It could find it, you know, like searching different things, but I don't know that we're in their feed. Now I have something to do, and I feel like maybe I'm letting the listeners down again. So, my apologies. I will follow Renee Adelsberger's example and figure out if we can get ourselves on Alexa.
But does anybody really have Alexa? Because I've currently never met anybody that's had it.
So here's the thing. You don't need the device. Like, I use Amazon Prime Music. So that's, you know, people who have, you know, Spotify and Pandora and whatever else. I use Prime Music because I kind of do everything in Amazon Prime. And yeah. Alexa is their, it's like their voice-activated search in that. So I can tap that and say, you know, play Oscar Peterson or play Joy Electric or whatever, and it'll do it. So it's a service, not just a device.
Do you have it open on your computer right there, Pipe, in front of you?
I can open it.
Dude, let's try it. Let's do a little experiment right here on the program. Let's tell Alexa to play the Happy Rant podcast and see what happens.
You know what? Let me see here. I don't know if it'll work. Let me pull it up. Let me pull up the app on my phone.
All right.
And give me a minute. iPhone 7's not quite as fast. All right. Alexa, play Happy Rant podcast.
Find a program named Happy Rant.
Oh,
that's
Alexa. What good are you?
Gosh, I mean, that Rachel the Held Evans.
Alexa, you are useless.
I give up.
Alexa the Held Evans. You know.
Alexa, geez. I'm very disappointed in you.
I'm sorry to hear that. You can always share your feedback through the help and feedback section of the Alexa app.
She doesn't sound very sorry at all. There was no like emotion in the voice that sounded sorry.
Yeah, there's no pathos. It lacks pathos. I lack the sorrow in her voice, you know.
Yeah, I didn't feel the customer service in that. I felt very disregarded.
I did as well. But boys, we are nothing if not radio professionals, and we regard our audience very highly. So big thanks to everybody who listens. Big thanks to those who go to LagarusRoasters.com and order Happy Rant Signature Blend Coffee week after week, as I know you do. And boys, we have some pressing topics to get into today on the program. And these all came from our resident man of the cloth who, just because of the quality of these topics, I feel that he is refreshed. And we're looking at a new Ronnie. This is Summer Ronnie. And I'm excited to get into this with him, and I'm going to go a little bit, Srani. That's right. I'm going to go a little bit off script in that I'm not going to go in the order that Ron sent these topics. But there's one that I thought was super intriguing, and it is this: design your perfect worship service. So the three of us are church members or men of the cloth, and we have sat through a lot of church services in our lives, boys. And I thought this was intriguing. So, Big R, since you are the resident man of the cloth and you ostensibly get to design your perfect worship service every Sunday there at Substance Ashland. And by every Sunday, I mean the four Sundays that you are in Ashland. What does that look like? What is your perfect worship service?
Dude, you know what's crazy? Like, right after I came up with that question, I literally thought exactly what you just said, which is technically I should be doing the services I want to do since I'm the one in charge of doing them, right?
Yeah.
So I thought, well, I really am doing what I want to do, but you know what I thought would make it just a little bit better? And it's kind of what we did in the very beginning when we were, you know, 30 people. You know, basically the first week you were there, Big T. Which was my ideal service is kind of what we're doing, but without any amplification. Like, I love it when we don't have to have like any sound system or anything like hooked up. Like, I love that. Like,
why is that, baby? Why the affinity for no sound system? I mean, I get it. It kind of makes sense, but I want to hear you explain it.
Because I kind of love, I love not being subservient to technology on that level. And there's like an energy. Sure. When you have to like really like kind of scream it out a little bit, when you got to just really let the vocal cords do the work, whether it's like singing or speaking. And I sure. love being in those kind of scenarios because I feel like it brings about this energy that isn't when you have to mic everything up. And there's just something kind of raw about it. And it kind of brings you back to the old school days when those dudes didn't have any amplification. And I dig that. I just think there's something like real about that.
Dude, I like that. No,
I think that's especially true for the music because if you're relying on, you know, electric instruments and a sound system, you can sort of artificially amp up the volume, which is like faking the energy essentially. Yeah. So you turn up the speakers and people sing louder, but they're not actually more passionate about it. Whereas if everything is acoustic, it sort of rises and falls on how invested people are in participating.
Yeah. I mean, amplification, you just said it, Pipe. Amplification is fake. So dude, if you're a church out there with amplification, you're almost doing like a faux worship service.
You're faking it.
Yeah, you're totally faking it. I mean, why don't we hear what's really in the depths of your heart and don't amplify it?
Does Mark Dever have speakers at his church? Because if so, I feel like that's a bit hypocritical.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's hypocritical. I would say it's not very Baptistic of him at all, to be quite honest.
Does he have the voice, though, to carry it off without the amplifier?
The problem is he does not.
Interesting. Wow. That's a controversy. That's a hot take.
Yeah, I'm texting my guy right now and saying just rip out all the sound stuff. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm done.
Well,
I'm done.
You should sell it because there's probably money to be gained in that.
Yeah, if we had a nice system, yeah, there would be. But I really for the you know $94 we'd get for ours, I'll leave it.
There you go, Piper. What about you? What about the perfect worship service for you?
Man, that's a good question. I feel like I've been in the same kinds of churches. Like every church service that I've ever been to more or less is exactly the same. You
really?
Know, it's because it, you know, it, you go in and there's a song and then depending on the, you know, the denomination or how theologically heavy they are, there's either like 35 minutes of prayer or like 35 minutes of announcements.
Sure.
And then there's more songs, usually a set of, you know, 2 to 4 songs.
Yep.
And then there's, you know, a reading of a text and a sermon, which varies from like 25 minutes in length to 55 minutes in length, depending on if you're, you know, what kind of church you are. And then there's usually like a song. Mm-hmm. And somewhere in there, maybe they do a greeting time, which is the worst.
Sure.
And then everybody is dismissed. And so it's like a cooking show where you get 3 ingredients and you can only reorder them so many ways.
Well, Pipe, you're telling us what is, man. Just mix it up, man. Give us.
Well, no, what I'm saying is it's I'm having a hard time imagining a church service with other ingredients or a greater quantity of one and not the other.
What do you wish was okay? Here's a question, Pipe. What do you wish there was less of every time you're at any church?
No announcements. No church service needs announcements.
Well, dude, there you go. You're in. Just say that you're already designing it right now. Look at him. He's designing it.
I feel well coached. Thank you,
Ronnie. He's a designer.
That's what I'm saying. He's designing.
He's a worship designer now.
Right.
I think
amazing.
Yeah, I think anything announcements wise can just go. If somebody is invested in the church. There are so many digital ways to communicate about what is happening, you know, that you can push those out there. If you think the church service is the best place to do that, nobody's paying attention anyway. So that's a waste of time. Also, not very corporate worshipy. I think I would try to do things that are more corporate. I feel like most worship services revolve around something happening up front and other people watching. And even like corporate singing, it still has a bit of a concert feel because of like there's up front and there's seats. So I don't know whether it's breaking it up to like pray with people around you or something along those lines, which is potentially really awkward, but that's okay. I think that would be good.
Pipe, do you wish they would just get rid of like would an ideal service for you just be getting rid of the music altogether?
No, I like music as long as it's worshipful music and not like concert showy music.
Okay.
You know, so that depends on how it's played and how it's led. Like the church that I'm at now, I think the worship leaders do a really good job because it doesn't seem at all like they are trying to be anything. They're creating an opportunity for you to sing along with them,
totally.
Which I think is great.
Yeah.
So no, I don't want to get rid of the music. I think that they're, I think church service has become almost too crafted and too performance, and not enough about the people who are in attendance.
Yeah, for real. I'm totally with you, man. Totally.
And no sermons need to be longer than 35 minutes.
Totally with you on that. Ooh, except for when I preach. Take.
Except for when Ronnie preaches for 48 minutes.
Because I mean, because I'm the only guy that can pull that off. I mean, let's. I mean, I think we've come to that conclusion.
You share that very individual opinion with every other Reformed pastor.
I'm the only guy that can pull off a 50-minute sermon, which is why I preach for 34 minutes every week.
Piper, do you feel like Reformed pastors, top to bottom, have to be the most like confident group of people in the world? Because they've looked at like decades worth of communication theory and research, which says that like people have like a 4-minute attention span.
And they're like, not my congregation. They're not like, no, nope,
I can do this. I'm the one. I'm special.
That's right.
Yeah, but baby, doesn't that just point to the fact that in actuality, they're all the most insecure dudes like ever?
Dude, I don't know. I don't know if it's insecurity or if it's like whatever Myers-Briggs type is just this sort of irrationally confident one. You know what I mean? The one that's so sort of self-assured that...
My apologies, Ron, but Reformed pastors are the swaggy P of preachers. They're the Nick Young of preachers, meaning they're not... They are just perpetually confident that they are the best, even if all data says otherwise.
That's fascinating.
It is fascinating.
That is fascinating, but it's so true, Pipe.
We got to do a future topic on that and talk about who we think are the most, just the most like confident. And I know on one hand you're going to say, well, that would be all of them, but like, who are the most like confident like Reformed preachers like out there?
Dude, and follow up question: is the confidence in like this is a real thing? Is the confidence off putting at all? Because I as I sit here, I can honestly say like our guy, like my guy now, doesn't strike me as that personality type. Like he's just got a humble spirit, and he will go, you know, he'll go 40-45 minutes, but I don't mind it, and in fact I really like it. But I think I like it because it's not just like oozing with confidence. You know what I mean?
That's because you have a relationship with the guy, right? So like if you...
I do have a relationship. He's a friend.
Yeah.
He's
so like, when they become a friend, then you're able to go, hey, you go 40, I'm cool. You know?
Dude, but here's the thing though. I've been friends with guys who have gone 40, 45, 50, who I wish they would go 30.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even though we're friends.
I think a lot of the guys do it, especially if they're on the, you know, they're not like the 60 plus crowd. They're like the 45 and under crowd. And they do it because that's what they've seen. Like that... All preachers are imitators. They're all copying someone else, unless they're old. And so they're all just copying all of the people who came before them, and nobody's ever like given them express permission to go, you know what? You can say a lot of things about the Bible in less than 35 minutes.
So who – and I have a question and a comment that involves your dad, Pipe. Who started going along first? Because from time to time, I'll listen to – John Piper sermons or Tim Keller sermons from like the late 90s, they were going 30 minutes. They were going 25, 30 minutes tops. Like when did the paradigm shift happen of like, who was the first guy to go, you know what? I can go 50.
Yeah. But Big T, are you talking about, because I think what's screwing up all these new dudes is that they listen to conference messages, which are allowed to go an hour instead of like a regular like sermon, which, you know, should hit like 30, 35, right?
Yeah, like at Together for the Gospel or the Gospel Coalition, those keynotes are like 50 to 60 minutes long.
Yeah, they're crazy.
Grief.
Yeah, they're crazy.
Dude, you couldn't pay me to sit in those rooms.
Well,
it just sounds like
we could probably.
I mean, I do get paid,
you.
And I don't get sit in those rooms.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't go sit in those rooms.
Baby, if I gave you a few bucks, we could probably convince you to come on in.
Yeah, how many dollars would it take to get me to sit through all the talks at a conference?
Gosh, I don't know. What would it take, man? What would it take to get you into one of those things?
I don't think I've ever sat through all the talks at any conference.
I haven't either. Never.
Yeah.
I would never sit through all the talks.
Dude, I'm looking at least a couple $100.
All right. You know? All right.
See, conferences are like taking the worst things about a Sunday morning worship service.
And combining them in one place.
And just like pumping them full of steroids. They're like, okay, the sermon's running a little long. We're going to double it. The music is a little showy. Guess what? Fog, big screens, and, you know.
We're doubling down on the show.
Yeah, just, and then we're going to sing 40 songs. And this is not a very corporate event. Guess what? Now we're in an arena where you can't even see anybody. It's just like it takes everything that is not awesome about a Sunday morning service and just magnifies it. And then they call it a life-changing
experience. Pipe, maybe that's why you're so angry, man. But I mean, do you think that's why is that why
I'm not angry? What are you talking about?
Do you think that's why younger guys though, like these dudes just they're like, dude, I can go 55 because I just saw David Platt go 55 at T4G, not understanding.
Well, yeah, and they've never had a 60-year-old guy go, you're just not very good. Get good before you go long.
Piper, let me ask you a question about these conferences. And maybe I should be asking Big R as our resident conference man.
Pipe's probably at more of these things than I am.
You guys both know. What's the eating situation of these conferences? And what I mean by that is if I'm forced to sit there for 2 hours through like 45 minutes of quote unquote worship, followed by an hour and 15 of a guy bloviating, like, am I allowed to unwrap a sandwich and eat it? Or like, can I do a protein bar? Are there snacks available? Like, what does that look like? Because obviously I can't walk into church on a Sunday morning with a sandwich.
Well, Ronnie carries boxes 2 hour of raisins around.
You can at our church. Covered. You can do whatever you want at our church. We roll like that. So,
dude, you can do whatever you want, or people do? Like, has there ever been a dude eat a sandwich at your church?
I mean, I don't know, but like, certainly it wouldn't be shocking if somebody was like eating something, because we have all kinds of food. So it's cool.
Interesting.
See, I love that as part of a corporate worship service where, you know, you have like coffee set up around the edges or something. It's like people can get up and get a refill mid 40-minute sermon. They're like, you know what? I'm not making it to 0.7 if I don't go get some caffeine right now.
Yeah, we have all that, right.
And donuts. Absolutely. Look at that.
You guys should live in A-Town. You know, you'd have apple pie every Sunday. You'd have apple pie. You'd have your choice of a new Chevrolet brochure and something baseball oriented. And you'd be able to do whatever you want, you know.
Judas Priest. So I think my ideal church service, it wouldn't be all that different from the one that we have now, the one that I experience every Sunday morning, except so ours is long, okay, Reformed church. I would cut the worship in half. I would just do half the songs, because here's the thing, man. Being that these are Baptists, if a song has 72 verses, they're doing all of them. Right, they're doing all of them. They're doing them all a little bit shoegazy, a little bit, you know, down tempo. So I would cut that by half. It's good though. It's good, and I enjoy it. I would enjoy half of it.
Much of a good thing.
Too much of a good thing. So we take communion at every church service, which I also really like. I think that's a great thing. Now, if we're gonna stay at 2 hours, I suggest moving communion to the middle. And instead of a wafer, serve a Cliff Bar. So a Cliff Bar standing in for the wafer.
Like, or like a whole dinner roll.
A whole dinner roll. And really a Cliff Bar, though, because you need the protein to get through that second hour. So I'm saying move it to the middle. Cliff Bar and a red Gatorade. All right? So it's still the right color. So you get the red Gatorade, you get the Cliff Bar. And now you've got the protein and the carbs and the electrolytes to get you through the second hour of the service. I feel like that would serve me as a congregant. But
and as a plus, I think that's all gluten-free too.
It might be. We'd have to check the labels. You know, that would get dicey.
We have,
you know,
we, that would you really, should have gluten-free options, of course. I mean,
because you got people not doing sugar, so that would negate the Gatorade. You got people
if you need gluten-free, you can go to like a Lara bar where it's all just like fruit and nuts.
Absolutely. I mean, this is not the 2000s anymore. We have gluten-free options.
Yeah, this is not – yeah, we're not cavemen.
Yes.
Exactly. That's right. What are we, animals
exactly.
eating Cliff
what
bars
are we, beasts?
With gluten in them? I mean, my goodness, gluten and aspartame, we're just killing ourselves.
Literally.
Yeah, so you know what? I love my church, man. There's not a whole lot I would change. Maybe just cut down on the first
maybe
hour
just those 11 things you mentioned. Other than that, man, you keep it fast.
No, you know what? I love it. I wouldn't even – cut down the sermon. Like, the sermon to me is the fillet of the experience. You know what I mean? It's the fillet, and there are times when I would just like to get to the fillet a little bit quicker, so I have a little bit more in the tank for it. You know what I mean? But other than that, I'm totally with you
on that, Big T. I appreciate the honesty, man. I'm with you on that. I struggle.
Yeah,
I'm a guy who struggles with worship. I always have. I did it for years. I struggled with it even when I was doing it, maybe even more. I'm totally with you, man.
Dude, I'll tell you, vis-a-vis worship, though, all kidding aside, like, a lot of times when I'm in the room, like, I don't get the magical feeling. You know, like, sometimes I look around and I see people getting the magical feeling and their hands are going up and all that, and that's cool. Like, that's really great. But I will say this about our worship. And what's really good about it is that I will often like wake up in the morning with those songs in my head, you know, and like they'll pop into my head from time to time. And it's really good. They're good songs. They're full of good theology. So I really do.
Baby, do you think you don't have that magic feeling pop in because of how long you're at Katie Wise worship services?
That could be, man. I don't know.
Could the magic be lacking because of your experience there?
I just think I'm a guy who doesn't get the magic feeling. Like,
you're just not real magical, man. It's cool.
I get it in weird times, though. Like, I don't know. I get the magical feeling every time I watch like Field of Dreams or Friday Night Lights, and they get to the end, and I'm, you know, I'm crying and I'm moved. And
of course, man, because that's a beautiful soundtrack. Watch, that's why.
If we could watch the end of Friday Night Lights, where Don Billingsley's father comes down from the stands and puts the ring on Don's hand, I mean, if we could just watch that maybe every Sunday morning, that would, like, I would be raising my hands at that.
Or what about like the end of Field of Dreams when he goes, "No, Ray, it was you."
I like that. I like "No, Ray, it was you," but I also like having a catch with his dad, with his ghost dad. You know what I mean?
It's all part of the thing. But I mean, just imagine like at the end of every service and you hear this, "No, Ray Ortland, it was you."
Yeah.
And with the music playing.
I hear "No, Big T, it was you." You know what I mean?
Like with that soundtrack playing, like, man, you'd be on the floor. People would think like, "Wow, man, Big T, that dude really worships." And it's like, no.
Yeah.
He's just conjuring up Field of Dreams for him.
Dude, Big T's on the floor at that point, thinking about Iowa, thinking about Field of Dreams, thinking about that wide shot.
Thinking about corn.
All the cars coming.
Slain in the spirit of nostalgia.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Slain in the spirit of nostalgia. That's a, hold on, I got to write that down. That's my next book title.
Dude, I honestly think, nostalgia is my worship thing. You know what I mean? Like it gets me there every time.
Yeah.
So I don't know. There's a lot there, man. We don't have to unpack all that. But boys, we do have two more topics to unpack. And this second one is, this is funny. This struck me as amusing. And Piper, I want to know if it struck you in the same way. The topic is best and worst summer you've ever had. It just struck me as a funny question. Like, what's your favorite color? And then what color do you hate the most?
It's real middle school, isn't it? It's very middle school. 13.
It's extremely 13.
This reminded me you're a freshman in high school and it's the English teacher is assigning an essay. It's like a 5-paragraph essay just to gauge who can write complete sentences. Yeah. This is that question. Like write a 5-paragraph essay about your best summer ever or your worst summer ever.
That's right. We're giving you options.
Thesis statement, 3-body paragraphs, concluding paragraph.
Dude, I love it because I was staring out the window and it's like super sunny and muggy and summer here. And it was literally the first thing that popped in my head was like that essay.
So let's go, let's truly go like high school English class. Let's go 5-paragraph on this. So Piper, best or worst summer you've ever had?
Oh man, let's see here. This is the drumming the pencil on the paper part while I think. My best summer ever, because the thesis statement must rephrase whatever the topic is.
Yeah.
My best summer ever was the summer of, let's call it 1994. When my family traveled, sorry, I'm done with this. This is boring. it was when we used to take family trips to visit relatives in Georgia and South Carolina.
Yes.
My dad's writing leave would be the first several weeks of that. So we would take like 2 months away from home. 4 weeks, he would be holed up somewhere writing a book, and I would be like gallivanting around the woods of Georgia with my cousins. And then 4 weeks was more like vacation. And that's when we would go visit relatives in South Carolina and go to Myrtle Beach and go deep sea fishing and those kinds of things. So it was all of our summer vacations were built around either denominational meetings or visiting family. We didn't do like the go to Disney thing. But it was just, you know, imagine like a 12-year-old boy basically being set loose at 7 a.m. with a fishing pole and being like, you can go fishing, you can go shoot things, you can go climb trees, you can go have pine cone fights with your cousins, you can go build stuff in the woods. Pick off the ticks when you get home. It was just sort of like heaven.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, it sounds good, man.
That sounds good.
That sounds really good.
Yeah.
Big R, best or worst summer? And I want to actually hear both from you, because I don't know that I could think of like what a worst summer. Oh, 1993, that one was horrible or whatever. Like, do you have a worst summer?
Yeah, no, here's what's crazy. I actually do. So I had this girlfriend when I was 16, and yeah. I had just gotten, I'd gotten my license, and I had a truck,
And dude, what kind of truck? What kind of truck are we
looking at? I had an old Dodge D50, like mini truck, back when they had like mini trucks, remember? Minis?
Dude, I had a mini truck too.
Yeah. Before they all became like medium size and like massively large and just, the big like, Dodge, where you can haul an airplane behind you and all that kind of stuff.
Like obviously Freudian, you know what I mean? Like, totally. Yeah, it's just like, I parked next to these like West Tennessee truck drivers, and these things are
Dude, huge. It's nutty because you're like looking at these dudes, right? And they got these trucks, and you're going like, you could have gotten like four Lamborghinis for the cost of like
that
truck.
You could fit four Lamborghinis into the bed of that truck.
The last time I was buying a car, I was like, you know what? I'm going to check out pickup trucks. And I was looking at 10-year-old pickup trucks with over 200,000 miles. They all cost more. Then I ended up buying
like high-end sports cars.
Well, they're outrageous.
I ended up buying a 2014 Jeep Cherokee for like $15,000 less than a 2008 Chevy Silverado with 230,000 miles on it. It's insane.
Those massive trucks are crazy. It's like starting at 79.9, and you're just like, oh, yeah. So I guess
you throw a mailbox.
I guess I'm not the blue collar truck guy like I thought I was.
The blue-collar truck guy.
Well, at the risk of sounding very judgy, when you see the people driving those, you go, "What? Where did you get the money for this? Like, what do you do for a job?"
That's just what they do. They just work to pay off that truck pipe.
That is what they do.
That's their
thing. But, I mean, it's even – and then sometimes you strike up a conversation with some of them, and you're like, well, your job doesn't require speaking – or probably reading or writing. So I'm baffled by the economics of driving big pickup trucks.
But they got their truck, dude. They got their truck. I mean,
dude, it's hard to make the numbers work, Pipe. It really is.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. I'm intrigued by something though. I want to know if ever in your years driving a pickup truck, Big R, you ever like tried on the blue collar persona. Even for a minute, like was this like a glimmer in your eye, persona wise?
Well, dude, I mean, here's the thing: like, my dad owned like a trucking company, so it was blue collar.
Yeah.
We had a fleet of trucks. So sure. We had big trucks, and then we had little pickup trucks that would do like local deliveries. So I just had like work trucks, like that's what I drove. So it was totally blue collar.
Man,
we were wearing like collars that were blue, literally.
Did you have like a little shirt that had a little embroidered part that said Ron on it?
Well,
like,
I mean, no, we didn't have to do that. That actually came later.
Okay.
But no, by the time we had to do that, I didn't have to do that. So it was,
Gosh, that would have been amazing.
Oh, it would have been beautiful. Yeah. But so my worst summer was when I had my truck. And I had my girlfriend, we'd been hanging together for a little while. It was looking good. It was looking long term. And
dude,
then,
what did a date look like for you back then?
Oh my gosh. It was, youth group and Christian concerts and pizza parlors and all that stuff. Yeah. But,
idyllic.
So in May of that year, literally 1 week before I got out of school for the summer, and it was my last summer because it was my junior year. I literally got my third ticket in a row, and I got my license swiped, and they pulled my truck away from me for the summer.
Oh, baby.
So there was my lady who lived 20 minutes away, and I was truckless.
Oh, man.
Soon to be former lady.
Soon to be former lady.
I mean, she stuck with me through the summer. She stuck it out.
That's a quality young lady.
She was quality. I mean, I haven't seen her since, but she August rolled around, got the truck back, had a few scant weeks left with it before school started again. And that was it, man. Worst summer ever.
Baby, that's a tough one. What about the best summer ever?
Best summer ever, I was probably like pipe. I think, I used to race dirt bikes. So it was probably like when I was 13 and we had all the cousins over and we were riding our dirt bikes and then racing on the weekends. And it was just one of those summers like you can only have when you're that age and you literally, it's before you have really any responsibilities in life, but you're old enough to where you can really enjoy it and remember it is what it was.
Baby, that's the kind of summer people write country songs about.
I know.
That's a summer that gets idealized. And
right. If I was like Pipe and I like country music, I probably would have written a few of those songs. But
The good country artists don't write songs about fun summers. They write songs about misery.
Dude, they would write potentially about like both of Ron's summers. You know, like the getting the license revoked and almost losing the lady. That has country.
Yeah, that's like a good country song. The one about having a great summer.
That's a bro country song.
Yeah, that's like Luke Bryan would write that crap.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
This is fascinating. Maybe you license some of those experiences, Big R.
I would love to. I mean, there's a book. Is Crossway interested in?
out of the Crossway, I think we're talking country music industry at this point.
Right.
Call it like Suspended Summer. And or something like that.
Yeah, suspended, or use the word systemic in there somewhere. I don't know.
Systemic summer.
If we use the word systemic in there somewhere, I probably already have a deal.
Yeah, absolutely. Systemic summer : how to think about how to think about summers past, present.
I love how you always go to how to think about that. I love that.
Yeah,
baby.
Yeah, of course.
Well, that's how you get it reviewed by the Gospel Coalition.
That's how you get a Crossway book deal.
How to think about
from the guy who's worked with every Christian publisher except Crossway.
You know, we need to have, check this out, man. We should do a topic just called How to Think About. And we should actually get the fans kind of like speaking in on this. What would you like us to do? Like send us a bunch of topics on our How to Think About topic. And then we will tell you how to think about the things that you want us to tell you about how to think about.
Right. Let us make law, man. That's what we're great at.
Yeah.
I mean, we've proven that time and time again on this program.
Yeah, that'll be a great new segment for us. How to Think About.
That's a good recurring sag, baby.
Yeah.
Best and worst summer for me, I think. So as an adult, a couple of years ago, this was back when we were living in Michigan, we just like threw the kids in the van and decided to take like a 10-day road trip out west. So we actually hit Minneapolis. We heard Pipe's dad preach. It was actually, I think I've mentioned this on the program before, but it happened to be the Sunday that he was preaching on gay marriage. So we got to explain all of that to our impressionable young boys.
So
you're welcome.
It was the gift that kept on giving. But we got to hear Pipes pops, and then we we did probably a very cliched like reformed vacation, and then we hit the Laura Ingalls Wilder homestead in South Dakota.
Wow,
which was the money, dude. I love.
Were you homeschooling your kids at the time? Is the real question,
dude. I rode a horse at that. I rode a horse. I made rope. we rode around in a little covered wagon. It was incredible. It was so good. So we did that. Then we went to like the Badlands and like Mount Rushmore and all that stuff. So it was pretty great summer trip. And the great thing about it was just the open-endedness of it. So we hit Boulder. So we did some Colorado stuff. And we just kind of were doing whatever we felt like. So we just went home whenever we felt like it. It was good times, man. As a child, we didn't really do vacations either, Pipe. So one summer, this would have been the summer between like eighth grade and my freshman year. I found like the only football camp in the Midwest that like allowed you to go in full gear. So it was like a week long, fully padded football camp. It was at the University of Wisconsin. So we played in Camp Randall Stadium, and I was this little like wet behind the ears, eighth grade, little pipsqueak going up against these gigantic dudes who were like recruits of the University of Wisconsin. It was a blast though. That was super, super
nice.
Fun. That was a good summer. Bad summers. It was probably, this one involves football too. So it was probably the summer of my sophomore year of college. I had broken my leg for the second time. Tried to come back too fast on it at camp and just like figured out that I couldn't run without like massive amounts of pain. So I actually quit. This was in college, and that was a bummer, man. That was a rough,
rough
end of the summer.
Yeah.
Kind of like starting the school year on that.
Yeah,
note.
No kidding. But,
yeah.
I think my worst summer was in college as well, but it was like the rude awakening that that like childhood is being left behind. Cause you know, my favorite things growing up were everything that I mentioned. And then once I got into high school, it was, we always did youth group stuff. So it was like short-term missions trips or camping trips or just sort of like high school bumming around with friends stuff. So I came back after my freshman year at Wheaton and tried to like re-enter that world.
Yeah.
And so for the first time in a year, I was living at home again, which was not awesome because I had gotten used to, you know, doing whatever I wanted at a college dorm. So that was a challenge. And then just realizing that like, oh, youth group stops when you graduate from high school for a reason. And so all of that stuff. And so I didn't like lose friends or anything, but just realizing like, oh, we've all gone our separate ways, even though we're all back in the same place. Like none of us, this isn't really home. It's not really our life anymore. You know, we went and led this junior high camp and did all the games and activities. And like that part was fun, but it was just weird. It was a weird transition. And so that was the last time I ever lived at home. And, I think that was probably the only summer I can remember that I would even mark as like a bad summer. And it wasn't
miserable. That is so nostalgically sad to me. That is so tragic.
Dude, it is. And yet so like
it's so apt,
universal.
Though. Yeah, totally universal. It happens.
I feel like what you described is like every college kid's summer experience. You know, like going home but having it not really feel like home, and yet like college doesn't exactly feel like home. I actually had one of those. So this would have been, let's see, this would have been the summer between my sophomore and junior year of college. So I just started dating KK and we were like madly in love. In my mind, I knew we were going to get married, but we were kind of doing the long distance thing for the summer. And she'd had to go like to Arkansas to stand up in this girl's wedding. So one of her best friends getting married. So she went to Arkansas, and you know how weddings are, man. I mean, there's always dudes and there's always like, you know, wedding party activities and various things. And I tried to play it really cool on the front end and just be like, you know, baby, just remember what we have and have a great time. You know, that kind of thing. Like all the things I knew I was supposed to be saying. So I'm watching Goodfellas one night with my buddy Russell, with my best friend. We're watching like this.
That's the perfect movie for an emotionally unstable like 19-year-old.
Oh, dude, absolutely. I was wildly emotionally unstable to begin with. And then on top of that, my lady is like probably partying with other dudes. So watching Goodfellas on VHS, because this is the video cassette era. And I get a call from my lady in which she tells me about, you know, some dirtbag in the wedding party who was like, didn't even know me, but he was like talking junk about me and kind of hitting on her. And again, on the phone, I'm playing it very cool. Well, you know, it's okay, baby. I trust you. You know, all the right things. But then I hung up the phone and I put Russell in the truck and I'm just like, we're going to Arkansas and I'm going to stomp this dude. Right. So that was the plan. The plan was to drive my like 10-year-old piece of crap truck, you know, thousands of miles. I probably wouldn't have made it out of the state. But my dad literally, I'll never forget this, had to like stand in the doorway and like keep me from going and
hold me back.
Hold me back. That was a wise moment from Pops, because Pops knew that the truck would not have made it, and I was about to make a bad choice that would probably end up with me in Arkansas jail, which is probably like a third world prison.
Yeah, I'm not sure Arkansas is where you want to go pick a fight with strangers.
Yeah, exactly, man. Exactly.
Baby, you didn't have one of those brand new Ram Tough Ram trucks, man. You didn't.
Dude,
have...
Ram Tough $80,000, you know, put a mailbox on it kind of trucks.
No. Ted wasn't compensating for anything.
Exactly. Even if I'd wanted to, I couldn't have afforded it. So, no, man, it was an 87 GMC Sierra.
So epic. Tan. So
it was so epic, man. You can't get a tan car anymore, but this car was legit taupe. It was like the color of
cactus. Yeah, they're not making taupe pickup trucks anymore, dude, because you're paying $80K.
They do.
You want something better than
Toyota
taupe.
Toyota does.
Toyota
has a taupe pickup?
Yes. It's like, you know, so it's the brand new, like, what is it, Toyota Tundra, and then the Tacoma is the other one?
Let me look it up right now, man.
I was walking by a construction site the other day because that's, you know, that's like the gathering of pickup trucks, you know, and everything's like chrome silver and, you know, fire engine red. And there's a car that legit is khaki pants brown. It's a Toyota Tacoma khaki pants brown. And
yeah, I'm looking at it right now. Like, that was the color of my Dodge D50. And they literally, you're right, Pipe. I'm looking at it right now. It looks epic.
Baby, your Dodge was khaki as well?
No, it was like a darker brown. It was like a darker brown, but like this is the color of it. And I'm like thinking, dude, I need to drop $80K. I mean,
dude, you know what I want to drop? I want to drop about 2K and buy my exact old 87 GMC Sierra.
2K? I mean, like, what kind of shape do you think that thing's in, baby? I mean, it should cost you a little bit.
Like,
it should cost you less than that, man.
It's like 20 years old now. Yeah, it should cost me less than that. It really
2K,
should.
You're thinking that thing is just gold, Pony Boy.
Dude, 2K, it's loaded. You know, it's loaded.
Oh, all right,
it's
all right.
It's got all the bells and whistles that 1987 could offer, for sure. Boys, we have time for one more quick topic, very quick. And this one is, what kind of ridiculous requests have we gotten in our jobs? And I can tell you that Piper and I are going to have to be very coy and cagey as we talk about this topic. And for the life of me, I cannot think of one yet. So I'm going to throw this one to you, Big R, being that it's your topic. And being that, as a man of the cloth, you probably get some crazy requests, I'm guessing. So what have some of those been for you?
You know what, dude, I couldn't think of anything from ministry, although I know there are a few, but none of them are outrageous as much as they're probably just a little annoying, you know, for lack of a better word. I do remember though that when I was back in the music days, when I was touring, I remember there was this one dude, maybe I mentioned this before on the show, I don't remember. But, you know, so we were an electronic band, which means we had a lot of tracks on backing tapes. So we can't play a song unless we have our backing tapes, right? And yeah. So, which meant, like, we only had the songs we had. So we weren't like the band that could take requests, right? We didn't operate that way, right? We just, we played our set. So there was this one guy standing in the front row, and he kept screaming out this song, and I could tell he was like really, it was like one of those fans, right? And at some point, you know, in between songs, I leaned over and I go, dude, I'm like, man, I go, I know you want to hear that song, but like, we don't have it. I go, we just don't have it. And so he kept screaming out the song, and it's getting towards the end of the set. And again, in between songs, I'm grabbing like a drink of water, and I go, dude, we would totally do that song, but we literally like don't have it. I go, look at like our tapes back there. We don't have it. Like, it's impossible for us to play that. And I go, dude, with how much you've been yelling it out, we for sure would have done it by now. And literally, we start our last song, and he puts one foot on the stage, and he lifts himself up, and I'm leaning over with my mic, and he just spits in my face.
What?
Yeah. And he just freaks out. And then so that, like, the, you know, whatever, the security guys came, and they, like, hauled him out. It was one of those, like, scenarios.
Wow.
And so I got all this stuff all over my face, and literally, like, you know, the song finishes, and you know, everybody saw what happened, you know, and I'm like, so I kind of explained to the crowd, like, what happened, like, you know, you guys know what kind of a band we are, we just can't do anything. And so it was just really crazy. So that was a ridiculous,
maybe that's unbelievable.
It wasn't even a ridiculous request. It's just that I was being so nice to the guy and said, dude, I would love to do it. I can't. It was reasonable. And he just flipped on me. Flipped.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. That's crazy. Pipe, what about you?
Shoot, I wish you would have let me go first, and we would have, like, that would have been the finale. I feel just
dude,
lame
right
now.
Yeah,
sorry.
I feel like I should be driving a truck to compensate for this.
Absolutely.
I can't think of a specific outrageous request in terms of just something outlandish, but I will say there's a persistent, low-key outrageous request that if you work in Christian publishing, you get over and over and over again. And it is churches asking you to give them stuff.
Free books?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just
cheap evangelicals, like, man. Cheap evangelicals.
Yeah, just like they send it, hey, we're doing this event for moms. Can you donate? Can you give?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, and you know, you want to be generous, but at the same time, you're like, we are a business. This, like,
yeah.
You want it for free because you can't afford it. We can't afford to stay in business if we give it to you for free. But it's just constant. Like, the idea that churches have that they should get everything for free because they are a church, I don't know where it came from, but it is constant. Mm. And the number of times I make people mad on an annual basis by saying, I'm sorry. I mean, we can give you a great discount, but we can't give it to you. And they're like, but we're a ministry.
Yeah.
I mean, congratulations. Good for you. That is the sort of persistent, it's like low-key crazy that just won't go away.
That is crazy. That is crazy, but it's so common. I mean, it's so incredibly common. Boys, I don't have a crazy job request, but I have a bit of breaking news. All right. So we're going to close the program with this. So I'm going to, here in my studio, I'm going to dial up the breaking news music. So hang on. Let me tap the glass and get the producer. Here we go. Breaking news. Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun.
That always gets me.
I love the vibrato.
You're talking about how nostalgia is your worship thing. I think the breaking news music is mine.
Dude, breaking news, absolutely. It's a good little song. And I have just ripped off the wire, you guys. This just came across the fax machine in my studio. I have a brand new piece of artwork from one Megan Tennant. So she is our artist in residence. So if we were a university, which we probably will be pretty soon, I'm thinking we buy some land in Kentucky and open a tiny Christian college.
Absolutely.
But Happy Rant University's artist in residence is Megan Tennant, and she has produced something, boys, that just quite frankly is staggering. In fact, I'm going to be clearing off mantle space above my fireplace at home. This is going in a rich golden frame. I'm going to haul it all to my house in the back of my huge F-950 Silverado. And what I'm looking at here, gentlemen, is a picture of me on a galloping horse, okay? I'm wearing a three-piece suit, a la Brad Pitt in the movie Legends of Fall, in some sort of like flowing riding jacket. There's a bag slung over my shoulder, and the bag is so authentic. It looks like the shoulder bag that I carry on a day-to-day basis. And there's a football sticking out of the bag. So a little homage to my life and my persona as a football person.
What's the footwear situation? Or are the feet buried thoroughly in stirrups so you can't tell?
The feet are in stirrups. I'm looking at a pair of boots, though, probably a pair of standard riding boots. And what's magical about this, though, is the hair. The mane of hair flowing in the wind, the blue glasses. I just look like the happiest, most contented horseman in the history of horsemen.
The horseman.
So, yeah, the horseman is what
Equestrian
it's called.
Equestrian Ted. That's a thing
Equestrian Ted.
I can only hope to see it.
I'm doing like dressage. I've got one of those little equestrian helmets.
Ted Questrian. That's what I want to call you, man. Ted Questrian.
I would not argue. I would not push back on that at all. So Megan Tennant, thank you for producing that while we were recording the episode. So very talented young lady, talented artist, and I will enjoy hanging this over my mantle at home. So, boys, we have done what we always do on this program. We've wandered to and fro throughout these topics. A little bit of a nostalgic ep, boys, and you know that's right in my wheelhouse. I enjoyed it. So until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
The Historical Jesus Podcast is the sweeping saga of the life and times of Galilean Jesus of Nazareth, as well as the faith, religion, and church founded to honor and disseminate his acts and teachings. Join me, Mark Vinette, on this fascinating journey through time, exploring the many great works of Christian theology, literature, architecture, music, and art inspired by the words and deeds of Jesus Christ.